to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right. Welcome back, world. This is another episode of Piercing the Veil, our 20th episode, in fact. And this is Jordan Michael, and I have Corey Stevens on the line with me here, as usual. Corey, how's it going today?
Everything's good, man. Hot. Blazing hot. Triple digits of down here. But otherwise, all is well.
Interesting. It's a little rough over here, but we got some clouds in Texas, so we're doing all right. And I mean real clouds, not the chemtrails. Yeah. We got an exciting show today. If anybody wasn't listening last week, we did a show on modern sorcery, shamanism, and some practical applications to make that a part of your life in any way that you choose. And then this episode, we have a special guest, a close friend of mine. Her name is Sergeant Rodriguez, and she's a military officer, a police officer, if you will, and she works out of El Paso. And we had some assistance from her with the Daryl incident. Those of you that don't know, I was gone for a week or two assisting with some emergency client business that had to do with Daryl Sprout. And he will be on at the second part of this show to sort of tell what happened. But anyways, Ms. Rodriguez, or excuse me, Sergeant Rodriguez, was crucial in assisting us. And she's just an all-around good person. We really like her. And we thought we'd get her on the show today to maybe talk a little bit about, you know, the other side of the coin. We speak about government abuse and government authority abuses and, you know, police and stuff like that, that are overstepping their authority. And basically, it's nice to hear from the other side. So that's what we're going to do. She can't say a lot of stuff. She can only talk briefly about her personal views and, you know, just general life on the base. We do not want to endanger any national security concerns. We don't want to endanger any personnel on the base. So obviously she won't be able to give any specifics. You know, this area of the base looks like this and this like that and so on and so forth. We'll have to forego those. So sorry about that, listeners, but it is what it is. And, you know, we're really excited about this. I want to start getting more intelligence agency and military personnel and police officers on the show so we can really hear firsthand what's going on the inside. You know, we said this multiple times, and Corey, I'm sure you would agree, nothing is a giant system. It's all made up of individuals propping up the system, their worldviews, their individual perceptions and beliefs, and that's really what you're, I wouldn't say fighting against, but what you're running up against every time when you're in these types of situations.
Yeah, there's all kinds of organizations. You know, maybe a classic one that you see in film and the movies is this rift between the FBI and the CIA, for example.
And the NSA, exactly.
So those, you know, they're all separate organizations. They're all separate corporations. They all have their own agendas. They all have their own protocols. And, you know, they're not all in lockstep with each other necessarily.
Governmental services corporations, what they are. The
right.
United States government itself.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So that's pretty much what we're going to go into, and with no further ado, I'll go ahead and introduce Sergeant Rodriguez.
All right, we're trying to reach out to her.
No worries. Do you have any friends or family in the military, Corey? Let's talk about that briefly.
Not presently. You know, my father was in the Army, and I have friends who were in the military but are currently out, some Marine captains and stuff. Some interesting stories. It's good. It's definitely good to converse with those guys, especially the ones who are, you know, as in the case with folks I know, kind of pretty intelligent and broad, a little more broad-minded. So, you know, they go into a different head.
Exactly. That's what I wanted
to touch on.
And
different experiences, yeah.
When they're removed from the active service and they have no further oath or obligation binding them to accept orders and so on and so forth. What is really their worldview and perceptions, having had the experience of war, having had the experience of battle and fear and hate, and, you know, also camaraderie and brotherly love and taking care of one another, and, you know, wanting the strong, wanting to protect the weak. All of those are aspects that are incorporated into active duty service. Myself included, I have a bunch of friends who have been over to Afghanistan and Iraq multiple times. No, I have never served in the U.S. military. I've always been turned away way back when I tried to do that. But I can understand their point of view. I can understand their experience to some degree, right? And it's consistently a perception of, I entered thinking one thing and I left thinking another. I entered for one purpose into the military and I left for another purpose. That's right. What I see constantly.
Yeah, I see that too.
Corey, it looks like we have Sergeant Rodriguez. Sergeant, welcome.
Yes, I have served in four combat tours. I've been to Afghanistan three times as a military police, and I've been to Kuwait, patrolled all Kuwait to the border of Iraq, as also as a police officer, and I worked really well with the Kuwaiti police. And yeah, as you say, we all take care of one another. We're a big family. I've been away from home, like, for years, and yeah, the military becomes your family. Like, within...
Interesting. And you said you worked directly with the local forces there. How was the, I know there's some translation issues maybe, but what was the cultural difference like? Did you have any difficulties in explaining your tactics and techniques, and were they, did they not want to listen to a woman? Because I know that Islam and Muslim has a bunch of restrictions on women teaching and stuff like that, so...
Yes, it is a true. They don't like to see a woman tell them what to do. But with me, I had no problems. I actually had a really good rapport. You know, I had they respected me because I respected them. I respected their religion, which is, you know, Muslim. They knew that I believed in God. So they respected me highly. And I learned their language so I could communicate better with them, and they used to feed us, and they like military, but they're drilled into thinking that Americans are just out to hurt them and kill them. But once you build a rapport with them and you communicate with them, they know that we're not what they told they were, Americans are. But yeah, I enjoyed it very, very much working with them.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, you had to just start from scratch. It's almost like teaching a child, I would imagine, with the cultural difference. And they probably felt the same way with the learning. Is there... Did you guys just go over tactics and techniques, or is there anything else that you guys were sharing while you were assigned?
Well, see, when I was working with them, they were already trained. Our Americans had already trained them. That's a whole different. See, I wasn't there to train them. We were just there working together. They were already trained, so they were working the Iraqi gate. So when I would patrol, I would just respond there, and they had issues, they would call me. So I would just go there and then hang out with them at the gate. And like I said, they had food for us. And but like I said, they were already trained. There was another group of military police that were doing that training for them.
Interesting.
So I had no problem with it.
Now, did you choose the military police, or was that assigned to you? I know there's certain modes of operation, or I forget what they call it, but your primary assignment.
Well, I actually wanted to be because I'm in the reserves, Army Reserves, and I've been a police officer, federal police officer for 14 years. So, of course, back then I was fresh as a police officer, so I decided to do it as a reserve site, so I could be an asset for the military if they ever needed me. And So I'm a police officer in the civilian side and in the federal and the army side and the civilian side. So I chose it, and I don't regret it. I love to serve my country. So like I said, I'm a civilian police officer for the army as well. So.
Interesting. And does that grant you any extra authoritative powers? I mean, are you able to arrest a general if he steps out of line or endangers? Of course, we're not saying that would happen, but any type of higher rank, do you have the authority to detain them if necessary?
Of course, yes. Once they break the law, my authority is actually overpowers their rank because they have to follow the rules and regulations like everybody else. You know, for instance, I caught a lieutenant colonel speeding 60 miles an hour on a 45-mile-an-hour zone, and I stopped him, and I gave him a citation just like everybody else. And then he told me, well, can you give me a break, you know, because it's going to look bad, you know, and with my career and this and that. And I told him, no, we just had a death in this street a month ago, so we're trying to, you know, lower making sure that there's no more fatality, so we're slowing down people. And he's like, you know what, you are so right, because he said I responded with the chaplain to that death. He's like, you know, so you keep doing a good job, and you know, and you know, no, if, like I said, and I've arrested a captain, it doesn't matter what rank they are, if they step out of line, yes, I do have to arrest them.
That's good to
but
hear.
But I treat them with respect.
Good, yeah, you know, obviously, and probably more so than they would most people, I imagine, on a general scale. I'm sure there's some really, really kind-hearted people, including yourself, that I've met in the military. But on the other side, there seems to be a lot of just straight by the book, only accept the training, the knowledge that I've been given, only, you know, my core focus and duty, just operate on that, and all the little gray areas around that, you know, I just ignore it. Everything's black and white. This is a civilian, this is a person, this is the, you know what I mean? Like, is there that type of strict, rigid mentality that you're coming across still, or do you see any shifts in the personal views of the military towards, like, any regular civilian or anybody they're dealing with and stuff like that?
It's not straightforward across the board. Like I said, everything's, I do try to follow the regulations for everything, the civilian and the military side, because, like I said, being in the Army, it's still the same rules apply, you know, as a military and civilian, because, like, I'm still working in a military base. So all the rules are the same, and UCMJ, of course, the military falls under the UCMJ. They're titled under a different authority, but still the same punishment for everybody.
Is it the United Court of Military Justice?
Yes, that's right.
Interesting. Okay, and so you've attended court hearings as a police officer for the military. Is that something you're familiar with? Because that's what I do, is lots of court stuff. You know, from the time we spent together in El Paso, you know about that. But what's been your experience on that side of the coin?
I've been pretty lucky. I don't go to court very much, and I cite people, and like I said, if they need me, then I'll show up. But rarely I have gone to, you know, any court hearings. So I've been fortunate, I guess. And cool. I recently volunteered about a year ago with the animal control. So I'm a police officer / animal control for Fort Bliss, the only female police officer in Fort Bliss.
That's right. That's how we met.
Yes.
You actually helped Daryl out, and he's super grateful. He'll actually be on shortly. He just wanted a chance to say hello to you finally. He's finally released from his prison and his jail. That's going to be awesome. Before we get to that, and I appreciate everything you said so far, it's very enlightening as far as where you come from as a person for anybody who hasn't met you, who would instantly know if they had what you're about. I did want to talk a little bit about life on base compared to life off base, and I do realize there's some certain details and parameters that you can't go into. We wouldn't want to endanger operational security or anybody's life or anything like that, because the show does go worldwide. We're listened to in all sorts of Muslim countries and China and even North Korea. Somehow we've made it into North Korea. But that being said, is there anything that you can describe, just even the basics or general stuff that might be different for somebody who's never entered the military or maybe has people in the family that are enlisted, but they've never ever been on base? Because I actually got to go on base with you, and it was an interesting experience just the short time I was there. So anything that you would describe, maybe?
You know, we protect the base. We take it very serious. Like when people come through, you know, and they don't have a pass, they have to stop by and get a pass. If they have warrants, if they have any kind of issues with the law, it's going to come out in the system. So, like I said, the base is protected because we don't, you know, want anything crazy happening. Like, I wouldn't just say active shooter incidents, but just any criminals coming into base, I guess I'm trying to not say
right.
Something that. Like I said, anybody that comes through has to get a pass, and once you go in, you know, you're free. You go to the PX, whatever. If you have a military member, somebody with the family ID card can go shopping, and a commissary also, you can go there and. They're very laid back. I mean, they're not just trying to get speeders, but they do. There's a lot of military police that are just out there trying to catch people, you know, making sure that people are going to speed limit, you know, because believe it or not, it's a big base, but it's a small base. We have rollovers. How can you have a rollover in a military base? We do, believe it or not, we do. We have a lot of, so we try to follow the regulations by stopping people and, you know, making sure they're not under the influence, and
I say
pretty safe.
Yeah, and most people, I was surprised myself to see, but I understand that most people have a basic understanding. They think it's just some fortification or it's all military, it's all tanks, it's all this. And some people fail to realize there's actual housing for every military member there, or most. There's, you know, what you have, schools, you've got theaters, you've got gas stations. It's just like a little city contained inside of whatever surrounding city it's in, from what I've seen. Is that basically sort of like everyday life,
yes,
but not?
Yes, it's a whole little city on its own. I mean, they have everything in there. I believe it's the second biggest military base. I think the first one is Fort Hood. But anyway, that one we have a lot of new housing. It's growing so fast. And, of course, lower enlisted live in a separate section, and then higher rank, lieutenant colonel, whatever, they live in a different, you know, better living conditions. But they all share, like I said, a commissary, everything. The movie theater, I think there's about 13 theaters in there, movie theater. A lot of stores that are
retail shops
opening up. Yes, that are opening up. There's we have everything. Everything can name up. It's there. Under Armour, a lot of restaurants inside the food court. I talk to a lot of military members, and they like going through there before they go to deploy and their training. They like going there because we have everything there.
Mm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Corey, do you have any questions about anything? Or?
I do, but I think we have Daryl on the line. Hey, Daryl.
Hello, and hello, Geneva. I cannot thank you enough.
You are so welcome. I freaked out when I saw Capone. I didn't know what the heck he was. I had to close it. That cart really fast. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah, for our listeners, Daryl was actually, he's going to come on and tell his story, and he wanted the chance to formally meet, formally greet Sergeant Rodriguez. Sergeant Rodriguez was directly responsible for saving Daryl Sprout's entire livelihood, his snakes for his traveling snake show. Daryl Sprout was a guest who was on our show multiple times. You can go back to the archives. But essentially, she helped us, myself, Jordan, and a few others, go rescue Daryl's snakes from certain death at the SBC. It was basically only because of her contacts, her position, and her willingness to assist us out of the goodness of her heart that we avoided a major catastrophe and were able to work with the situation a little bit better. So with no further ado, Daryl, this is Sergeant Rodriguez. Sergeant Rodriguez, this is Daryl, and we'll let you guys say your greetings and whatnot and go from there.
Hi, Daryl. I'm glad that everything's that I could hear your voice, because I was
I was
kind of worried about your animals. I when I took them to the shelter, I knew they were going to get rid of them within 3 days, so I had to make some calls and find who was going to rescue your animals. So I ended up taking them to my house. I don't know. I'm sure.
Though I heard that is going above and beyond the Call of Duty on several levels.
Most definitely.
I cannot thank you enough, and my animals do too. I got to say that during the, I don't know, first 28 hours at once El Paso had custody of me, I mean, they basically made it impossible for me to find out anything at all. So I had no idea whether something I spent 35 years to build. Yes.
Yeah, I apologize for interrupting. I just want to make it clear. The only reason I actually found out where you were without further extensive research and calling another 30 people is Sergeant Rodriguez called me on my cell phone magically out of the blue. So again, thank you for that, Sergeant.
Wow.
I was literally wondering where you were and asking and trying to find out where you were, and all of a sudden she calls me and goes, "Hey, is this Jordan?" You know.
Yeah, that was everything kind of worked out pretty good. I was so happy that I said, "Oh, okay, we got somebody that's gonna, you know, help out these animals." One of my lieutenants was telling me, "You know what? Just let him go. Just let him go." I said, "No." I said, "We have to find, you know, where these animals."
Oh yeah, none of those would have survived there. None of those would have survived there. Yeah.
No. He said, "Just let him die." He's like, "Nobody's gonna, you know, he doesn't have any family here. Nobody's gonna come from Dallas to, you know, to get him." So anyway,
someone
did. Humane Society, and right away they told me. The doctor told me, he's like, "You know what? You know, I don't have a place for them. You know, I have nothing to feed them." So I'm like, okay. So that's when right away I had to make some calls, and so when I got a hold of your manager and all I call them the, you know, like the Wizard of Oz crew. Like, I like all of them.
Yes.
All of them. You know, I talked to them until they came to El Paso. We didn't even went to them because they were not even going to surrender your car. It's a good thing that I showed up because a guy recognized me. He's like, "Hey, you work in Fort Smith?" I'm like, "Yes, I do." So,
and you got a
phone. Anyway,
thank you.
So everything worked out good. And then I knew that nobody was going to give them a place to stay. Nobody was going to, with all those animals. So I told them, "Hey, you know, I have a place that I just built, and they can stay, you guys can stay there. And I don't expect any money. I just want you to save the animals." So.
Go ahead, Sergeant.
I said, I actually shed a tear when I knew that we saved all the animals. Because,
You did. You did.
I appreciate that. Well, now you two are formally introduced, and hopefully you'll be able to look up his show at some point, Sergeant. It's a really, really funny show, and you'll see Capone. I was helping him with some things, and I found a booklet of Daryl's that has him holding Capone. And for our listeners, Capone is Daryl's very, very large Tiga. Tegu?
Tegu, yeah. It's a black and white
lizard.
Tegu from Argentina.
It's like a monitor, but different, a little bit larger.
Yeah.
And
he's a rock star.
He's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are you ever coming to El Paso, to Fort Bliss to entertain the kids, or is that, are you still?
Well, that was the idea. I was hired by a contractor who was contracted to Fort Bliss. Believe me, had I had any idea that there was some issues still with that warrant, I would have, at the very least, I should have called ahead and said, "Would you guys check this just in case?" Because I tell you what, there is nothing more gung-ho than a young MP. And, oh, brother, they didn't listen to me at all. I wonder, had I said something like, "Look, I'm on base. You've got complete surveillance over me. let's go do the show for the troops and their kids, and then let's talk. Mm-hmm. Maybe everything would have gone very differently, but they were they wanted me in those handcuffs right there, and I couldn't talk them out of it at all. I tried to be Jordan, and it just didn't work. So, yeah, they didn't pretty much hear much of anything I said. It was a very impressive ride around the base, I got to tell you, and the brig is not to be sneezed at.
I actually, I do remember, because you were still in there, and I called him, and I said, hey, we need Daryl to sign something for Jordan so he can be able to get the animals out, because they were not even going to release the animals without. So, like, I was trying to make sure that I caught you in time. I'm like, oh, like I said, and it's a good thing that they know me, they know my voice, so right away, like, oh yeah, sorry, I'll help you right now. So they went and they talked to you, and I was so relieved. I was so relieved, because I said, you know, once they take them, to find them, it's going to be hard. It's going to be.
That would be why they came to the holding tank door. Yeah, they came to the holding tank door to ask me what those animals ate. So that must have been because of your phone call.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's just a wonderful situation that could have turned out a whole lot worse. Sergeant, I really thank you very much for all of
your help. All of them are good, right? All of them are alive?
Yes, we're all alive. And we found an extra one when we got back.
Oh, nice.
One that had been missing here for a while reappeared, yes. That's true.
Yeah, and so, Corey, is there anything that you wanted to ask Sergeant Rodriguez? I know she has to get and go on another project pretty soon, and so we'll go to commercial break and then come back with Daryl, and he'll tell his entire story for the world to hear. But, yeah, just anything that you guys have, we'll just go ahead and ask that now.
Yeah, Sergeant, you mentioned you were in Kuwait and Afghanistan, and I would just be curious to get your feedback on what it was like for you being in those environments that are pretty much different than what we're accustomed to over here. If you have any thoughts about, you know, or your impressions of being in those places and you know, what you may have learned, or some of the more interesting or noteworthy interactions that you may have had with folks over in those other parts of the world.
You know, it's actually an honor meeting people from other countries, especially when they see you as an enemy, and you're kind-hearted, and you're a good American, and you love people. So, and that was me. Like I said, I think I won some hearts of a lot of these people, because before I came back, they wanted to continue to communicate with me, and they wanted to get my email. So to me, it was an honor, because, like I said, we have different beliefs, but we all have the same heart. We even people from Bangladesh that were there, just people in Kuwait, there's people from all over the world, and in Afghanistan, too, because I was working in the military base, so you meet people from all over, and you get to bond with these people, and but of course, you still have to keep your guard up, because a lot of the ones that I dealt with were like straight from, you know, they're supposed to be in our enemies, but in my heart they weren't, because I was not there to judge anybody. I was just there to represent the military, you know, that uniform, and to serve my country, you know, and it was an honor. The only thing that I didn't like, of course, was sleeping through the bombing. You know, you would never. I would be sleeping in the tent, and all of a sudden I would hear like incoming, and I would just pray. I said, "Hey God, if it's my turn to go, it's my turn to go." So I don't know if I have PTSD yet. I guess they've told me that I have the signs of it, but I try to ignore it. I always think of something positive. So. There's a lot of stuff that startles me when I'm here back in the state, but I try to stay positive, like I said. But other than sleeping through bombings, I guess it was a good experience. And like I said, I would do it again if God, you know, wants me to serve my country over there again. I'll go again. I was supposed to go to Cuba this year, but I don't know if I'm still going. Possibly end up in Kuwait somewhere again, but I will do it again.
Mm. All right,
fantastic.
Thanks.
Thank you for that. Oh, man. Yeah, that's... Yeah. And it sounds...
Well, Sergeant Rodriguez, sounds, you have my undying gratitude forever.
Thank you, Rodriguez. You are welcome.
Likewise.
Maybe one day I'll meet you in person, and you can bring your animals again. And did they tell you where you took them out and fed them one by one?
No, I've got to show them the picture still. He hasn't seen those yet.
Yeah, we had to make some ghetto cages and put them all in there. It was it's okay.
We did some rattler wrangling, so we had to deal with your rattler.
Yeah, yeah, that's Jesus. He's from Venezuela. Most people, when they see him, pronounce it the other way.
He's got a very spicy disposition, we'll say that. And Sergeant Rodriguez, I can't thank you enough either. I really appreciate your assistance. And just telling your story just now, and mm-hmm. the way I hear that you're actually, I wouldn't call it self-medicating, but you're literally self-healing when you seem to address what could be called PTSD symptoms, such as being startled by noises while you're back over on the side. It seems mm-hmm. that the thinking of a positive image or a positive concept and a positive feeling, you're actually counteracting the ingrained response. And the more that you do that, the more your response will come back to neutral, which is, oh, there's a, you know, the door just slammed and I didn't even jump. I noticed it and I was situationally aware of it, but I didn't have any, like, fear reaction from it. So I think you're actually going to get to that point if you continue doing what you're already instinctively doing. And I commend you for having the intelligence level to do that. Most people aren't aware of themselves or their body like that. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Perfect. Okay, guys, what we're going to do is go to commercial break. Sergeant Rodriguez, I will be in touch soon. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you got my phone number. Daryl, if there's anything else you want to say your goodbyes there, we'll get to commercial as soon as you guys are done.
Excellent. Thank you. I can't say thank you enough to all of you, really. It's quite a story. You're going to be a big chapter in my book.
Oh, you're welcome. And like I said, my pleasure. I would do it all over again, anytime. I just hope you don't go to jail again.
Yeah, no, I've had that experience. I now had that experience. I don't need it anymore.
Yeah, before you come to Fort Bliss, make sure you call me, and we'll go together to
Sounds great.
This
Thank
nice boy
so
is here with his snakes. Leave him alone.
Oh, have a wonderful
thanks
day.
Thanks again for having me on the show. Thank you for letting me share my story, I guess, with the animals. And like I said, it was my pleasure, and like I said, I'll do it all over again. I had to, you know. I love people. I love to help animals, and like I said, I love to serve my country. So, you know, we're all a team. We're all a family. So we all help one another. So.
Right on. All right. Well, thank you, Sergeant.
Okay, you're welcome. Honor to have you.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
Welcome back, everybody, to Piercing the Veil. This episode, we had Sergeant Rodriguez, our special guest, on today. She had assisted me and Daryl with some client emergency work over the past few weeks. And we also have Daryl Sprout. He's on the line right now. He's going to share his story in detail about what happened to him.
He's done a few processes to presumably get himself on the do not detain list, which seemed to operate and function just fine within the counties that he'd given notice. And when he went to go do a show in El Paso, Texas, which is way outside of our range of notice, he ran into some issues. That's not to say that everything is not negotiable, because it is, but there does appear to be some renegotiation happening on the government's part or the state government's part in the background regarding these do not detain lists. And we're trying to keep everybody up to date with the new and honest and full disclosure of when stuff doesn't work or what factors might have led to it not working. So with no further ado, we have Daryl Sprout on. He's going to tell his story. And welcome back, Daryl.
Thanks, sir. What an adventure.
Any way you like. I know it's a mouthful. If you want to just generalize it and then go into the details or however you want to do that, we're listening.
Well, you've already basically given the background. I mean, we did put notice in the places where I've had to deal with this before, and really it's only happened once, and it worked just fine. And led to a false sense of security. I really kind of needed to finish this job out. I already had a deposit on it. Figured, I could address it. But, yeah, had we sent notice ahead of time, or at the very least, if I'd have called and said, you know, will there be a problem, all of this could have been avoided. Looking back, I think maybe I was just supposed to experience the whole thing, because I really have now. I mean, I have an entire book easily. Again, as Officer Rodriguez is one of our chapters, but I mean, I could easily make a chapter about 15 different characters in the last 22 days. The experience was outrageously insightful. I've seen it from all sides now. I've witnessed what happens when a town figures out, or a town sheriff figures out, that there is there's a profit center to be had. And the town becomes predatory with it. And holy moly, I mean, they love something like what happened here. Basically, the MPs calling them about the fact that there was a warrant. While it was inactive, they weren't willing to contact anybody in a county that I'd talked to. They contacted the original county directly, and all they did was reinstate the warrant. And then when you came all the way, and I don't even know at this point. I mean, basically, I can't get past the fact that the MPs are saying it's on the books, that's that, and they're whipping out their handcuffs, you know. And I'm trying to say, wait a minute, look, there's all you got to do is contact a magistrate in Dallas County or Travis County. I mean, I knew if they called Wilco, which is arguably the most corrupt county in the country, although I learned a lot of things about El Paso while I was at it. Corrupt isn't the right word, I guess. It's just nobody listened to me. I mean, the entire time, I didn't get a word in edgewise for the most part. We got you, that's that. The magistrate was like, I'm holding you for extradition from Wilco. The warrant is active. So I spent, 8.5 hours in the brig at Fort Bliss. The show, I mean, it's supposed to be three shows back-to-back for the troops and their families. I was subcontracted to somebody that was contracted to the base. All they said was go buy the thing and get your pass, you know what I mean? So I never got past that point. They hauled me off. I did, pull the medical card, because I do have a significant case of DJD in the right hip, and so they hauled me off to the military hospital and got an x-ray of that, but once they had it, it's not like they acted on it. I spent the next 8.5 hours in their brig. If she hadn't called, I've never heard from anybody for 8.5 hours. For a while, it was clear that the building was empty. And I was just in this little one-room cell with nothing but a concrete slab. You couldn't lay down on it because it sucked all the heat out of your body. It was really cold in there. So I paced for 8.5 hours. That was very interesting. A few push-ups, that sort of thing. Then El Paso comes and gets me. El Paso apparently has had a complete, the entire town has gone insane. Word of the wise, don't drive to El Paso on Friday the 13th. The jails were utterly full. The jails were utterly full. The holding cell I was in for 28 hours had from 17 to 22 guys at various times. The surfaces are too hard. I definitely couldn't sleep on that floor. So, I mean, I pretty much was standing for all of that time, the day before and that day. Every once in a while, I'd sit for a while, but I couldn't for long. They finally send us upstairs, and I end up, because I'm going to be there for 10 days because of pending extradition, held without bond, pending extradition to Williamson County. So I end up in a maximum security end of the thing in the old county jail, older facility. It was just totally, I mean, everything you envision of the big bars sliding across really noisily and the big doors sliding across very, I mean, the thing woke you up 13, 14 times a night, whether it was a flashlight in your face or one of those doors opening and closing. They got you up at 4:30 to eat breakfast and then put you back to bed. of course, it's prison. It was basically maximum security. The water's not drinkable. The food's not edible. Every surface is hard. Every answer is no. But everybody I met was a very interesting character. And some of them were pretty, they would tell you, they were pretty hardened criminals, pretty serious stuff. But every single one of them was a human being with a story. And there was one guy that came in, you know, I've talked about the ZPI. The police had beaten the hell out of him. He could barely walk. His eye was all swollen, really bad shiner on that side. They'd hit him with glasses on, apparently. They gave him a top bunk, so I literally had to pick him up there, frankly, to get him in and out of it. And I said, dude, you need to let me work on you. And sure enough, next morning, the swelling was almost gone in his eye, and he could get in and out of the bed. They extradited me the next day, so he got my lower bunk. There was a bunch of people I was able to help while I was in. I found out that a place that I was truly afraid of, that the lie that started all this was a single predatory cop that, I mean, you could Google his name and find out what a liar he is. I mean, he's lied on the stand before, and it's all about DWI. That entire county is based on, here is our primary way of making money, and we will pull you over for the least little infraction. If that little light isn't glowing over your license plate, or if the slightest thing is amiss, if you barely go over a line as you enter a highway, any of that stuff, this town will pull you over. And if they have the slightest thing to go on, I've got a bad hip. I couldn't pass a field sobriety test if my life depended on it. And yet, based on failing it, he arrested me. And then he hauls me off to jail, I'm watching my worst nightmare after I explain in detail, very lucidly, to the game warden what every single one of my animals was and what care they needed. They haul them all off. They haul my van off in another after pretty much tearing it apart for evidence. They didn't find a thing. The open container that was why the whole thing started, that I didn't know he could see from his flashlight beam, they didn't find anything else. In fact, they even added a 12-pack of something else that they bought and threw in there, ostensibly to take a picture of and show how, what a lush I really had been, I guess. I don't know.
Wow.
They emptied one of them, threw the rest of them in there. The guy who got was at the pound got a big windfall from that because I gave it to him. I don't drink from aluminum. Anybody who knows me knows that. But anyway, they gifted me with actually an 18-pack of 16-ounce, yeah, aluminum cans of Budweiser, out of which they'd emptied and thrown in the floorboard. I'm not kidding.
Man, they planted evidence.
And let's see. Oh my God, they cuff me as tight as they can cuff, and then they add a zip tie and tie that really tight, and then they put me in the front seat of a squad car pulled all the way forward. This is the definition of torture if you have DJD in your right hip.
Wow.
And this is all back in 2014.
The very definition of torture.
This is all back in 2014, right?
Oh, yeah, this is 2014. This is the night of June 2nd, yes.
Yeah.
So,
what we did a process on.
Oh, yeah. We've done a bunch of stuff on that. To my understanding, it was gone. And having talked to cops in Dallas County, it appeared that it was. And you're right, by failing to notify them ahead of time and getting that county involved, all they saw was that it was still in the books, and that's all they cared about. That was all they cared about. And by contacting Wilco, they reinstated. In fact, they activated it like it was brand new. I met a guy who was in there that had stuff that was supposed to be gone 10 years ago. They dredged up and possessed it.
You'll find that constantly. I've had that experience in multiple different counties. And, you know, at the end of the day, you live in a fucking police state. I said that last week's show, and I'll say it again. And just to run down for anybody who's not paying attention, America has the largest prison population in the entire world. America has prisons all over the world, secret clandestine prisons, all sorts of different things that are off books that we're not even counting. And in America, you are 6 times more likely to be beaten to death or shot and killed by a police officer than you are to die of cancer. And cancer is already like, what, 2 in 5? 2 in 5, 3 in 5 adults will experience some sort of form of cancer in their life on average living in America. So that's pretty bad. Not to mention that the prison system is completely privatized, operates for profit, and is purely monetary driven, which is why you're experiencing that type of stuff in the first place and being charged with crazy cases that don't exist. Where a typical judge doing his job would be the stopgap in between the arresting officer and the final conviction, where he could actually see there's no evidence and it's ridiculous, but that's not what they do. And so if we do a brief analysis, Daryl, I just wanted to wrap that up because I think that there's a few points we can look at. If we analyze, and Corey, I'm sure you'll have something to say about this, the magistrate interaction was sort of like your saving grace opportunity, number one, like the first time you were arrested in El Paso. Then you were transferred to Williamson County in the middle of the morning. When you got there, what was it, like 12 hours in, something like that, you went and saw another magistrate, which was like a second opportunity. And yes, we can say these are all tests because you're on a do not detain list, and somewhere somebody does know that you've done this properly and they've seen all the info on you and what to do and how to test you and all this stuff. Yes, that exists, but if they've given up on you or you've got outstanding obligations and you haven't taken care of them or something, then they might be justified to take you in on a state level. I think Corey and I spoke about this in a previous episode, the 3 levels of do not detain and detainment justification. And so I'm saying that the first magistrate experience, you could have maybe contracted a little better.
I think so, too.
And then the second one, perhaps you were just up against a brick wall because of the nature of who you're dealing with. It's the original arresting county. They're politically corrupt. They've got one of their DAs is on probation right now. One of their judges, their sitting judges, was arrested and convicted of holding somebody innocent in jail for over 25 fucking years. All sorts of different things. These are verifiable facts. You can look up Williamson County, Texas. So that being said, I also believe at some point we need to acknowledge and be real with the fact that maybe this process has shifted or it's not working for some people for certain reasons, and that those reasons don't need to be disclosed. Mm. Because has anybody ever been disclosed without going to a seminar or doing individual research and verifying any of this, the straw man stuff or the birth certificates in the court cases as trusts or, the do not detain list, so on and so forth? I'm not aware of it. A lot of these guys, I believe, and Corey, we've had this experience. I think a lot of these guys that are gurus teaching this type of stuff may be receiving source intel from certain white hats or black hats in these agencies. And so while the substance is true and the laws and the codes supporting or substantiating these remedies, if you will, all these freemen, people that are searching for these things, the remedy, right? It could be that those are actually coming from government sources, or just some very highly skilled people doing independent research in the nature of FOIA, Freedom of Information Act requests and stuff like that. Maybe over the years, they just garnered enough knowledge. But I do believe that some of these guys are government plants, and the others are targeted. And, there's some level of targeting at a federal and a state level against certain people who would be deemed or perceived as threats. And so what we try to do, Daryl, and I'm sure we've talked about this before, is to enforce and stand and produce our rights into the reality around us without rebelling or being violent, but also being real with the fact that he who has the gun pointed at your face has some sort of an advantage if you're not some guru that can stop a bullet in midair.
I think there's three issues. Basically, if you've ever had a charge, if you've ever had interactions with the authorities, you have to go all the way to make sure that there are no more charges, that those charges are settled, that you have tendered a payment in some form or another, and that you followed up thoroughly, right, on that particular case, and to make sure that there's, you know, even if in your, you know, I had a situation recently where I had the judge repeat on the record, so, okay, so there are no more charges against the defendant related to this or any other matters emanating out of the county.
I would have loved to have said that at the end of what I had with that judge. That's a great thing to say. I love it.
Yeah, and I did, you know, three times on and for the record. And I noticed a stenographer who actually, I see him kind of behind the glass in the in the office sometimes, and he happened to have been the stenographer today. And he was kind of, you know, I actually have the sense that he was kind of excited to see me. Because I, you know, I've gone about doing things differently than most people who interact with the authorities. So he was kind of amped to see how, and he was paying very close attention to my interaction with the judge and so on and so forth. So anyway, that's one thing. You got to close it out. You have to close out the account. You know, if you bond the case, or if you're gonna, you know, you're gonna satisfy it with Federal Reserve notes or whatever, you got to be real thorough and make sure it's closed out. The other thing is notices. You got to give notices, and you have to go up the chain of command. So if you have an incident in a county, you got to make sure that the county attorney is noticed. You know, you got to make sure that you know, on the state level, you got to notice your attorney general, the governor, the secretary of state, you know, the highway patrol, the state police, you know, all the way up to, you know, the IRS, the Social Security, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, transportation, right? Because we're all goods and chattel. Right, U.S. citizens are considered goods and chattel, and they're doing business. So you gotta notify the Commerce Department. You know, so really, it's like you gotta push it far and wide. And that's one thing that I've noticed is that, and I have to say I was a little sloppy in the past in certain situations. Yeah, I've handled this and so on and so forth. But come to find out that I didn't really follow through enough, apparently, because some of those things were still at issue. And then, of course, the third thing is how you comport yourself in real time, right? Which is what the wordsmithing, you know, Jordan, that's really like your forte, in my experience, is how you conduct yourself in the moment, in whatever circumstances you're in. So, you know, those are basically the three things. If you have issues, clear them up. If you're taking an alternate tack, if you're going private or you're a protected person or doing some of these processes, you got to give notice to everybody. To everybody across the board, and from your local municipalities to the sheriff, all the attorney's offices, up to the state level and on up to the federal level. And then ultimately, it's how you roll in the moment. And I think really, really, that's the spiritual part. The other stuff is, you know, the other stuff is paperwork and process. You know, really the place that I feel I want to be, and I think that all of us are trying to get to, is that this is a spiritual game. It's a spiritual matter. Okay, so Daryl, I love what you were saying. Like, it was an experience that you needed to have for some reason or another. And that's cool.
I had some karma to pay, and now I've got a bunch to pay back because of it. Yeah.
Right. So you had to, okay, something that the universe was showing you in that moment, right? Because somehow or another, you weren't getting it in another way. Somehow, and so again, this thing.
And I want to break in real quick. You guys mentioned karma is something that I wanted to share with our listeners. I really believe that karmatic debts, and I have a specific view of karma, but I believe that these types of things can be absolutely paid in the instant, in the moment, by either producing some sort of extra energy from your body or your auric field and giving it to that to resolve the issue. By recognizing that even disease and karma and all these different types of what people would call ailments are actually negotiable entities. These are sentient beings that have consciousness. Everything has a consciousness. So by negotiating, taking that stance instead of letting the terms fall where they lie of, oh, this is a debt. Oh, this is karmatic debt. Oh, I have to pay it like this. I mean, I have to do this amount for this amount of time. Do it. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I totally agree. And to your point, when I say it's a spiritual matter, you know, if we're up on our stuff and, okay, whoop, like in my case, okay, I'm driving down the road or traveling down the road. I'm trying to get to the store before they close. I don't have any ID on me, right? I'm making a quick jaunt to the store. I was engaged in something before leaving that had my, you know, I still had my attention, so I wasn't paying attention. And I'm 10 miles over the speed limit. And I see the, you know, vehicle passes me on the street and turns around immediately. Right there in that moment, I'm like, okay, I'm about to have an interaction. Okay? So I go back into my mind. Okay, did I dot all my I's and cross all my T's? And in that moment, as you say, okay, I could take this karmic lesson and go in and, you know, spend the night in confinement and blah, 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 blah. Or you can take the higher spiritual path and say, I know the lesson. I know the lesson I'm supposed to get here, but here's how I am going to resolve this situation before it escalates.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I was saying. You can actually understand it, and the understanding of the problem and you finally having a full comprehension of it, and it doesn't need to manifest to help show you anything anymore, that's consideration and payment in itself in full in most cases.
You don't need ass whipping. I get it. I don't need my ass kicked. I understand what's going on here, and here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I think the point Corey is making and our listeners can understand is that you can shift instantly in the moment after the jail cell, while you're there in population. You can somehow, if you concentrate and meditate hard enough, shift your reality energetically to the point where you're released and you have your wish. And Daryl, I will say that now you have a better understanding on how to do that in the moment. You have less anxiety, I would say, from experiencing what was so fearful of you to experience. Corey, you've also had some experiences recently which might have touched you up a little bit and given you some more clarity and detail.
Definitely.
And it's always negotiable. It's always changing. Don't rely on the paperwork. And just, listeners, look within. Be intuitive. Always rely on the instincts and then build on the knowledge and the compassion and all the skills that you have outside of the body or in this physical reality.
Right. Know who you are and then let everybody else know who you are.
Yeah, we got about 1 minute. 1 minute or so left, Daryl. If you'll just wrap that up real quick. I know you wanted to finish on some thoughts. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, just another huge thank you to you and Amy and Officer Rodriguez and John. I mean, I had always wondered if I just vanished, how long would it take for people to notice? I should have asked the question.
Be careful what you ask for.
I've learned from this experience.
Yeah.
Perfect. You're very welcome, man. I made you a promise when we started this thing, and I will continue to try to affect everybody's reality in a positive way and be there in times of stress. And if you guys have any issues in the future, you know where to go. First, look within, and if you need some assistance, call me. And for our listeners, I thank you very much. I want to shout out to Plague again. That was super awesome what you've done recently. It seems like you've upgraded and now you're available on Mac and PC as opposed to just cell phones, which is super cool. I myself am utilizing that along with my social media manager, John Figueroa. We post under the posting name or the username of Piercing Avail 86. So, Corey, thank you very much. Daryl, again, thank you. You're very welcome for your assistance in those other matters. Just consider it equal. And for our listeners, next week we're actually going to have a really exciting guest on. His name is Johnny Delirious. He's actually healed himself from multiple different ailments and used to be a cocaine addict or have a strong addiction, if you will. and on the way to the bar one night to score some coke, of all cases, he was then abducted by ET aliens, and he was able to tap into their hive mind, if you will, and he extracted a method of healing the body, which doctors have studied. He's been on David Icke's show. He's talked with multiple doctors around the world, and they can't figure it out still. But he's got a healing modality as a result of him sort of hacking into the mind as his experience was happening. His name's Johnny Delirious. He'll be on next week. Thank you very much, guys, and we'll see you next week.